Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Lauren Strink, founder and CEO of Legacy Programs Education Reentry. Here we talk about the struggles, the injustices, and most importantly, the healing of people and letting their story be heard, giving back their voices, not being the voice, but more particularly allowing people to have their voice back with power, confidence, self-esteem, and healing. And today I have a special guest, everybody. His name is JR. I've known this man for, we go way back into prison where, we were both called kid. And now, by the time we get out, we're old men and grandpas and OGs and stuff like that. So, but he has a very interesting story. He's been instrumental on my growth out here, watching him do what he does. And just most importantly, inspiring the ones, our brothers and sisters still behind the walls that are still wanting the reentry and just awaiting the chance to do so. And he is inspiring all our brothers and sisters that it is possible and that it can be done. And I just want to welcome JR. JR, welcome to the Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light.
Thank you. Thank you, Breeze, or Lawrence, as everyone probably knows you. But it's good to be on your show.
Thank you. So how long have you been out now?
I mean, it's just over a month now. I haven't really been keeping track of the exact days, but I think it's like 40-some-odd days, or 50, close to 50 days.
Okay, and how long did you do? I've been talking about you on the show. I just want, from your words, like how long?
Almost 19 years, 18 and a half years I did, from the age of 19 all the way up to the age of 37.
Wow. Now, and for people that don't know what's going on, how is your reentry going?
How old what?
How is your reentry going?
For the most part, it's going smoothly. I've had some obstacles with the ability to be able to get clothes and get the stuff that I need to get out there to get working. But I've had the support of friends and family that have stepped in and been willing to say, "Here you go." But if I didn't have help from people like yourself, Lawrence, and other people that have given me clothing and gotten me going and given me that ride and given me that push and a little bit of money to get going, it would have been a lot harder. I don't know how much you've told about your story, but when I was first getting out, I was kind of scared that would this happen to me, even though I did have the backing of being a lifer, being forced into transitional housing.
And so do you still suffer from any of like the prison PTSD and the alienation, isolation, or anything like that?
At times, yeah. Like I went to Santa Monica Pier, and I was walking down the pier, and if there was a lot of people, and that was like my second weekend out, and during that time, people were bumping into me, and they're just trying to go, they're just going about their lives, and they're not even tripping. But as I'm going about, I'm trying to make sure I'm not bumping into nobody. I'm trying to apologize. I'm thinking. I bumped into a woman and her breath bumped against my shoulder. And I'm thinking, shit, I'm going to get rushed right now. But I had once I got to the end of the pier and I was able to see the fresh water and the whole time I was breathing, but it was still that anxiety, that anxiousness, that not knowing what was going to happen because I'm accidentally bumping into someone or I'm accidentally not stepping out of the way of someone that used to be of authority, because they would just put their authority out there, not caring that I was a human being. I was numbered when I was inside. I wasn't treated as a human being by many people. So
and
do I fall underneath some of the hang-ups? Yeah, I still have the occasionally. I'm going to get into the shower and I still have my boxers, my T-shirt on that I've been wearing, getting ready to go wash them. And I have to remind myself, I don't have to do this. I got a washing machine now. So it's finding those small little things. I'll always have the common courtesy of opening the door, pleases and thank yous. But sometimes I find myself that I'll pull back a little bit. I'll be watching the scenes more, and people are looking at me like, well, why is he so withdrawn from everyone? It's getting easier as the days go. The more I'm out in society, the more I'm talking to people, and I'm starting to get back to where it's like, I've had people that I've sent pictures to inside there like, you don't even look like you ever did a day in prison. So.
And that's true. I mean, so if you can, what's some of your, like, give us a little background. How were you raised and stuff like that before, like pre-prison?
So I had a rough family. My biological mom and dad, my mom, at the age of 4 and a half, my first memory was my mom holding a butcher knife up to her arm, yelling at my dad that she loved him. So at that age, I was taught, and I didn't know this at the time, of course, but I've learned this through my recovery groups, that I was shown a perverse way of having to show love and be shown love, that it had to be an extreme way. And then I was sexually molested by my father, and he used to say, you'll do this because you show me you love me. So that was another way, at a very young age, I was shown a perverse way of showing love. So when I was beaten by my stepmom and scarred on my face, and my mom saw it, the cops were called, and the cop came out to see me, and they're like, well, what happened? What's going on? And I told them. At first I told them, well, I just crashed into a fire truck. But we didn't have a fire truck in the house for it, so they were like, you can tell us you're in a safe place. Nothing's going to happen. So I told them. I reached out for help, and they were like, you didn't do nothing wrong. The next day they came and saw me, and they asked me more questions. I told them what was going on, and then I went home, and that night the cops came out. They grabbed his kids up. My two brothers, they're latched onto me in the back of a cop car. My dad's crying, and my brothers are crying on my shoulder, saying, "Don't mommy and daddy love us no more? Are we ever going to come back? What happened?" And in my mind, I'm saying, "This is all my fault. I can never ask for help again. I will never ask for help again because look what happened." And this is at the age of 7 and a half. Then I proceeded to be bounced from family to family, and I was with, like, the first family was okay, but their son, he got jealous of his kids, so he started beating on his kids and like sending us out in the woods where he knew that there were hornets and everything. And we ended up getting bounced family to family. Us three brothers, we got held together for a long time, but we ended up getting split after about 7 years because we were, I mean, three brothers. We're going to argue, fight, and do what brothers do, but it was too much for families. So they took us and they just split us. And that's when a lot of my guilt came in, that I'm supposed to take care of my brothers, and I've once again abandoned them. And it's my fault. So I went into myself a lot. I didn't allow for anybody to help me, because I figured either you were going to hurt me or I was going to hurt you. So I couldn't ask for help. I couldn't offer help. I couldn't receive it. And it made me go into myself. I was known as Angry Johnny all the time. One of my pictures from school, I wouldn't smile at the camera because I wanted my mom, and they couldn't get my mom there fast enough, and they just took the picture. But that picture resonates with me because that's how I felt for a really long time, until the age of 14, when I met my mom, the lady I call my mom. Her name's Ingeborg Anna Marie Rake, and she passed away in 2009. But she showed me the love. And this is in foster care. And it took 13 different foster homes for me to find her. And when she finally found me, and she said, I'm not going to give you up. I'm going to love you. I'm going to care for you. I'm going to do everything I can to show you that you're worth. I didn't trust it because of all the families that had said, we love you. We're going to take care of you. And then being bounced out. So subconsciously, not so much consciously, to an extent consciously, I would test it, but I didn't want to trust. I didn't want to take that chance of being hurt again. So I stayed to myself. Did I love her? Yeah. And she, all the way while I was in prison, she was the only one that would answer the phone, that would call, that would send me letters, that sent me a package, that sent me, that got me my first TV. She made sure I was taken care of the best that she could have. And she was the one who cracked open my heart and showed me the love that a kid deserved. But I grew up beyond my years. When I left and I ran away from her home, thinking that I was a grown up, thinking I had it all figured out, and I went and ran to my biological mom and Robert Stephen Stearns, his house, I was in there, and I'm thinking I have to do adult things. So I'm out there. I'm watering pot plants, and I'm running around. I'm selling drugs. I'm selling crystal and weed, and I'm doing it. And I'm thinking I'm 240 pounds solid, and I'm a 135 and a skinny punk. And I was living life to the fullest. I'm not. And I didn't think I was. I thought I was just going through living like a man, but I was an angry kid that didn't trust or couldn't be trusted. If you had something I wanted, if you had something I wanted, needed, or had to have, I was going to get it from you by any means, either with your consent, steal it, take it, whatever, however I had to do to get it. And I had so many people's hands out saying, just leave, stop doing the drugs, and just walk away, and we'll take care of you. We'll put a roof over your hand. All you got to do is work for us. All you got to do is just leave that alone. But I had so many skeletons in my closet from being in foster care, telling the cops, thinking it was my fault that all this stuff had happened. I couldn't trust. I thought I was in a good position when I was in the worst position that I could have possibly been in. So I went and I took it upon myself to be a man. And in doing that, my mom ended up leaving Robert Stephen Stearns. It wasn't my fault. That just was a relationship that ended up crumbling. I wasn't a help to it because I was just furthering the drug use and the drug selling and the discombobulation that comes with that type of living environment. And I was self-medicating. I was numbing myself. I didn't, with weed and crystal, and I didn't want to deal with reality. I even went so far as I had a lady get pregnant, and she was like, I'm leaving. And it was so important for me to stay where I was at because I couldn't trust. I was like, well, you're just another one that's just bouncing on me, so go, bye. And at that time, it didn't affect me because I was so used to people walking out of my life, I didn't care. And then it came to the point where when my mom was gone, this lady had was meeting up with Robert, and he was trying to woo her, and she had taken him for a ride and then taken all his money and all his stuff that he paid a lot of money for. So he was down and out. He wasn't wanting to live anymore. Every morning I would come up and tell me I'm tasting gun barrel grease. Well, the morning of May 4th, 2004, I came up to the his log cabin. I'm sorry, and I told him, "Hey, I busted the hydraulic pump. I'm about to take off." And I went down and was in my cabin for the night. I came back up the next morning, and he said, "Hey, I need you to take a seat." And he was sitting there, and he's red-eyed. We'd both been up for about 2 weeks off the methamphetamine. And he started going in. He started saying, it's your fault that your mom left. It's your fault Susie left. It's your fault I'm about to lose all my property. It's your fault I'm in reckoning. It's your fault I'm about to lose my property, and my kids aren't going to have nothing. You got one of two choices. And he pulled out a 9mm, and he put it in between him and I. And he said, either you can pick the gun up and you can shoot me, or I'm going to take it. I'm going to shoot you and then myself. And at that moment, everything slowed down. I didn't know what to do. I'm young. I don't want to die. But here's another person that I hurt. So So I go into myself, I'm crying, I'm begging him, what can I do to get out of this? And he said, there's nothing you can do except for what I just told you. And he looked me straight in the eye and he said, look, I'm going to take this bong hit. And if by the time I'm done with this bong hit, you haven't shot me, I'm going to take that gun from you. I'm going to shoot you in the myself.
Wow.
And regretfully, I shot him. The life of Robert Steven Stamps. And I'm sorry, but every time I talk about it, because this was the worst day of my life. And I regret it each and every day.
Wow. I just want to take a moment. I don't mean to make it awkward with the silence. I just want to take that in. And yeah.
I'm sorry.
No.
But
I'm good.
This thing, every time I bring this up, it brings up raw emotion because I am regretful today for the actions I took. It was my choice. I could have left, but I was stuck in my ways. I was stuck in my bullheadedness, and it didn't stop with that day. Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, and you know, your story. I'm listening to it, and it's like, you know, I've been out 2 years, and I remember my first time going on the radio show and hearing my story. It was actually with Tommy Rock, and it was society has a weird way of just judging our loved ones coming home, you know, our brothers and sisters behind those walls, and that, you know, they're criminals, they're convicts, they're you can't rehabilitate them and stuff like that. But hearing your story, like, and I've known your story. I mean, we've been in numerous groups together and prisons and stuff like that. But you know, it's like if society took the opportunity or the time to listen to somebody's story, and that's what I'm hoping to do today, you know, with yours is, you know, people need to hear this stuff because, you know, your story as you're speaking is a 19-year-old kid that's scared. You know, yeah, you made bad choices and decisions, but you know, never mind. You're a 19-year-old kid, and I can only imagine what it was like to be in your shoes. And I just want to, you know, we've come a long ways. And
yeah.
And so your recovery is a beautiful thing, and what you're doing, and how you're honoring. What's his name? I'm sorry.
Robert Steven Stern.
Robert Steven Stern. And every time I hear you tell your story and every time I hear you talk about it, you always mention him by name, and that's a beautiful thing. Is there a particular reason why you do that?
The reason why I never forget his name is because I'll never kill him. If you forget a person's name, you've killed them twice. Because I killed Robert physically. If I forget his name, I've killed him twice because his legacy will never live on. Now through me and through his family, but through me, through what I've learned and everything that's gone on, the story that I share is because of Robert Steven Stern. So just because of all the pain and suffering that comes from that day, growth and opportunity has also come out of it. And I live in honor of his name, Robert Steven Stern, because he deserves to be alive today. So the only way I can bring him to life is through saying his name.
Okay. I like that. That's very insightful, actually. So with your reentry and stuff like that, I mean, what's needed out here for success and permanency? Any words on that?
I mean, the transitional homes are good. The only thing that's kind of muddled on that is, like right now I'm in Amistad in Southern California. I got placed all the way in Southern California, all the way away from my family. So my connections, if I didn't have the people that I knew in prison down here, I have no connections at all. And that's me having to really hit the ground by myself, where there should be a movement of, okay, yeah, you don't want me back in the same county that I perpetrated my crime. I understand that. But it should be, when you're in prison, they got what they call a hardship. So they should have a place of, okay, get him at least close to where he's within distance of his family. Because I have a sister who lives in Sacramento, and she can't afford to drive all the way down here. That takes money away from her mouth, her husband's mouth, and her family, and her daughter's, all of her family's mouth. And I can't leave within, I can't leave out of a 50-mile radius out of LA, so that tears family apart again. I mean, yeah, because of technology and everything, I can see my sister, I can talk to my sister over the phone, but it's nothing like the day that I got out and I was able to give her a hug. So I think having that closeness to family is one thing. Another thing is having that starter kit. When I got here, if I didn't have people out here, I would have got out, been slapped with a bunch of clothes that R&R. I saw someone that had to get clothing from R&R, and they were terrible. I felt bad for the guy. If I would have had extra clothing, I would have given them clothing. That's how bad it was. And I even said something to the R&R staff, and they were like, "That's not our fault. He should have had something sent in." And I'm like, wow, the one point something billion dollars they spent for CDCR, and we can't have a program to where everyone gets a suit. I mean, the Goodwill, they have suits, they have clothing at a discounted price. They can't have someone go out to a Goodwill, to a thrift store, to a Salvation Army, and go get clothes, nice clothes for people. Not having my Social Security card, not having my identification card. As soon as I got to the house, I was told by CDCR, no, after 10 years, you can't have an identification card because the picture's outdated. Yet I get to this house and they say, no, it's a 20-year cap. So there's a lot of inconsistencies. If an individual is able to get their identification, have their Social Security card, and a birth certificate, they can come out here and getting a job is that much easier. If we're able to start studying for the driver's exam and possibly get our driver's exam taken care of while we're in and have a license when we get out, there's so many jobs that are hiring right now if you have your driver's license. It makes a world of difference, but they give you a reentry class. And you know what's funny? There was someone that got a 3-year denial that got put into a reentry class. I got my date given to me, and I was requesting to be put in this class, and I was told, no, you're on a waiting list. You'll have to wait at least 6 months. Really, I have to wait at least 6 months, and I go home if I'm approved all the way up in 5 months. So I don't get none of the extras that everyone else got from being in the reentry program. None of the knowledge or anything. So having that stuff set up would be huge. Having that suit to be able to go for a job interview and present myself, it made a world of difference because I was blessed from an individual that I knew in prison that had dress slacks, dress shirt, and went out and spent their money on me to get me dress shoes, a belt. I was able to dress as a professional, not in just everyday runaround stuff. I was able to go to a job interview and actually impress the person that was sitting there, not only with my intellectual conversation that I had with them, but from visual. Visual is the first thing that they see before they even talk to you. And I was told, don't get comfortable. Because if you want to move up the ranks, you can, because you put that persona out there just from the first second we see you. I had someone when I was at my job like, you work in upper management, don't you? I was like, no, I've started with you guys. I've only been working 3 days. They're like, oh, shoot, we thought you were like one of the higher up bosses. No, but you put the, if someone has that opportunity to dress the part and act the part, they can go somewhere. But if I'm having to walk in with sweat and chanclas and a T-shirt on, I'm not going to have the same opportunity that has that someone that has dress slacks, dress shirt, and dress shoes going into an interview. So having something like that, transportation, having a way to be able to get transportation. Right now, the public transportation is good because I'm right here in LA and the bus take you everywhere. But what if I'm in a place that doesn't have that opportunity, like where you're at, Lauren? They don't have bus transport, I'm pretty sure, to take you everywhere you need to go. So there's a lot of things that, like I said, I don't want to misspeak, but I think it was like, what, $1.9 billion spent on CDCR last year in the budget? It might have been more. It might have been a little bit less. But
there's a lot.
And we can't get nice stuff to get started with. We're throwing the churn-ins from what people are – no longer want because their packages came in.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny you say that because the stuff that I had issues with, the stuff that you're speaking on right now, so I was released with no ID, no birth certificate, and I did 20, so I wasn't in the system, and I went through those same hoops of go here, go there, you can't have this, stuff the other, you can't have that. You know, one of my things is I pulled in a suit, too. And it's really interesting how you say that, you know, when you dress the part. I wore a suit when I first got out 6 days out of the week, that I wore a suit every single day. And because that was very important for my self-esteem, because I didn't want to be associated with an inmate or a convict. And so it's crazy how you, even 2 years later, I mean, I'm not the only one that was thinking that. And, you know, the stuff like, you know, and that's why I was talking, I posted something on Facebook this week about a video. I did live, actually, and I was talking about why it's important to bring in new blood, you know, because we're stuck in the spider web now. You know, I am. I've already re-entry back into society. I'm entered. So now what I got to do is, you know, I don't have the same struggles we still fight, but, you know, I've completed my task. And that's why I'm so excited to have you part of Legacy Programs and eventually running off and doing whatever you want to do with it. If you want to have a program where you buy suits or where you get suits, let's work on some Goodwill, working with them, see if they'll donate to do that. And, you know, let's be part of the solution. That's why I love bringing the new blood. That's why I love you, brother, and I think that we're going to, you know, you're going to take reentry to levels that I cannot no more, you know. And I'm so proud of you and what you're doing and speaking out about this stuff. And you know, it's one of those things that, like, you know, we're not bashing the system, right? I mean, we're sitting there saying, hey, let us do the job that you don't want to do. And, you know, let us assist. Let us. Because at the end of the day, that nobody's going to have our back like each other, right? And
exactly.
I know working with you, one of the things that taught me going back and one major thing you taught me is that technology, you know, our brothers and sisters, we need to, I think it's so important to have a laptop and a good phone, you know, when you get out. And not only that, but how to work one. And so, I mean, you taught me that, and that's why we're trying to, you know, that's clothes should, computer laptops should be just as important as clothes at this point, right? Because everything's technology.
Yeah, I agree, so, because having being able to have a laptop allows us to get on the internet and job search and find jobs, and there's jobs out there. That's been another thing that has been crazy is all this talk about all these, and I see it every single day when I'm walking around on the streets, is all these homeless people, and they're saying, well, there ain't no jobs for us. There's plenty of jobs out there. You know how blown up my phone is? I'm surprised the thing hasn't broken yet. It gets so blown up every day from jobs. So the jobs are out there, but it's having the opportunity and the transportation and the ability to find it, having the computer, having the phone, having the phone and computer first, and then having the clothes to go for the interview. And then not only that, having the clothes to continue that because, I mean, if I go for a job interview at a warehouse, which I worked in a warehouse for the last 6 years, and that's the job that I like doing, the physical labor and everything, okay, I go in a suit and a tie to this interview, that's all fine and dandy. But on the next day when they're saying, okay, you need to be in jeans, boots and everything, having that ability to have that stuff and be able to go to work and have that stuff, it's that type of that isn't given to us right now. We have to go and we have to network. We have to use our support network. And not everyone has that same ability to get that. And everyone should be afforded that to give everyone the chance and the full ability to say, I was given the chance to make it.
Yeah. Do you feel that you've been given all the opportunities for reentry and successful and permanency?
No. Like I said, I was given when I got into this house, I was given the bare minimum and told, okay, well, like there's groups here and there's everything, but a lot of the groups that are in the reentry program, they're basically MCRP and they're like rudimentary. What I've been doing for the last since 2008, and it's kind of monotonous. But I don't want to get stuck on that. I wasn't given the opportunity to say, hey, let's go and get you two pairs of pants and this and this and this and this, and get you to a job. No, I had to get the job interview, and then I had to figure out what bus to take. What, and if it wasn't for Google Maps, oh God, I think I'd still be looking for that place. if it wasn't for people around me teaching me how to use this stuff, I wouldn't know what technology is. And you got people that have been down 20, 30, 40 years that are coming out here and they're looking at this stuff like, how do I turn that phone on?
Yeah. And how to reset it every week. Otherwise it crashes on me. I learned that the hard way.
It's great that they have the free cell phone plans and they have the EBT and the, but on that same thing, if they have that cell phone waiting for them, just like, I mean, don't get me wrong, they have this I can't remember. Hold on one second. They got this program that actually does do a backpack program. And they were really big. Am I allowed to say their name on the radio?
Absolutely.
So they're a company out of Oakland, and they're called Bonafide. And they actually sent me a backpack, and it had cosmetics. It had a towel, a washcloth. It had a little bit of food. It had a decent phone. Now, and they pay for the first month and 1 month additional plan after that. So if you're hitting the streets and you're actually doing the work and you can get your plan going, but it shouldn't come down to a foundation having to do that. They should have that stuff afforded to you right there when you get out. Okay, here's your backpack. Everything's activated. You're good for 6 months on your phone bill. After that, hey, we've given you your opportunity. I mean, they say these reentry houses are supposed to be to reenter into society. When I come into the house, it should be fully stocked and ready for me to go and then be able to step out. And even if it's one of those, okay, we gave you $150 worth of clothes. When you leave, pay it forward. Let us get the money back. What's $150 if they've given you every opportunity and helped you get a job?
Yeah. No, and that's...
And like...
And so...
Oh, go ahead.
Huh? No,
go
ahead. I was just going to say, and that, I think that's... So, and that's the problem. So, this is the problem I have with organizations. And this is why, and I'm not going to name them publicly or nothing like that, but I would love for you to tell me how legacy programs, education reentry can actually, because I think if everyone worked together where we all did and shared this information and resources, that we could affect more of our loved ones coming home. So I would love for you to sit there and just write down some stuff that we can do to properly assist in today, not 2 years ago, but today, and what we can do, and send me that information so we can try to. And I would love for you to, when you get some time and when I get some time, and actually reach out to some organizations and we'll see what we can do about this. Does it sound like a plan?
Sounds like a plan to me.
And I think that's lovely. Our mentor program I've given to other organizations as well, where because we have a successful mentor program that people are like, how does it work so well? And none of my guys have gone back that I've worked with because my mentors are freaking awesome. And, I think that, today, I didn't have any of these resources when I got out, especially during COVID time. Nobody was really trying to do anything for me. So we need to really dig deep and figure out what's needed and necessary. And it's crazy to think that, just, 5 years ago, we were sitting in an ABP room and trying to, we're just talking and stuff like that. And then years before that, we were in Salinas Valley together when we both first started out. And and now look at us, we are success stories, man. And I think that needs to be celebrated because it's important to, do you remember when Dwarf came back, Kenny?
Yeah.
Okay. So he was in Salinas with us for years and years. I mean, this guy, and he was a good dude. I mean, he had it all together. He talked a good one. He walked a good one. And then he gets out, and he's out for, 3 years, 4 years, and ends up coming back on a violation?
Yeah.
Remember that? Okay,
oh, yeah.
So, and that was very detrimental to me. And I never told anybody that, but it really affected me because I'm looking at him going, well, shit, if he's not going to make it, how am I going to make it? And, because we're always in constant comparison of others. And if you remember Big Show?
No.
Okay, so Big Show was in Salinas with us too. He was in three buildings and on AR. And he made it out here. He started with the Goodwill, started doing public speaking, started speaking out, advocacy. And he was my inspiration at the time. And to watch him do the things he did, I was like, if he can do it, I can do it. But then when Kenny came back, it really affected me because I'm like, now I'm starting to doubt myself. And I did for about, for a year or so. So, and it's important that, the ones behind the walls are brothers and sisters actually still be inspiration and people trying, and it gives them hope. And what you're doing today, JR, is truly amazing. You are part of, I think they said, 3% of the parole population of what we're doing right now. You are part of that. The success, the fight, the, getting a job, staying free, no police contact, stuff like that. So that's something to be celebrated. And then, just what you're doing with your, moving up in management already. I mean, that's so cool. And I'm very proud of you. And I told you could do it. And, just remember that, when we're out here, man, we are beacons for those still behind the wall. We are those success stories that they need to hear, and they need to see that it's possible, because it's somewhere in their minds they're going, well, shoot, look at the world I'm going to. Remember when I used to tell you guys, like, hey, it's rough out here. And
yeah,
all you guys had the same response. You're like, oh, shit. Like, oh, man, this is what I'm getting myself into. But do you see like those conversations when I told you you're going to be fine out here, that it was rough? Like, do you see what I was talking about now?
Yeah, I'm 100%, because at times, like when I'm walking down the street and I have my short sleeve shirts on or my tank tops on, and people see me with all the tattoos, even though tattoos are accepted these days, it's still one of those that you get the double look. But the second, so like I've been to a couple places where it's like, man, I'm a normal human being just like you. But you still get that shunness. You get the where it's harder to fit in to the crowd. So I understand where you're coming from. However,
I think
me having the help from people like you, even this transitional housing, even though it gets frustrating and I want to be able to be out there and networking people and doing what I need to do to be successful out there in a quicker way, taking it slow and taking it day by day, I think has been better, because it's allowed me to dip my toe in the water and then get out and then dip my whole foot and then get back out. And it's getting my mind to where it's like it doesn't get overwhelmed too quickly, just like the day on Santa Monica Pier when all the people were around and I was like, oh, my God, I'm freaking out. I was holding it together on the outside, but on the inside I was freaking out. So I understand. I do.
Yeah. And let's just do a thing, or because we're always blasting the organizations and people that don't do crap for us, right? But why don't you put some names out there for the people that actually have helped you?
Okay, you're talking about the organizations, right?
Anything, anybody, just you know, let them know who they are.
One of the biggest places that started my recovery was the juvenile diversion program in Mule Creek State Prison. That started me seeing where I used to be and where I didn't, where everything started turning and everything. And I started working on myself. And you had people that were instrumental, that were behind the scenes, the free staff that treated us like humans. Also, LTOP, Long-Term Offenders Program. Anybody that's heard of it, anybody that's in the California Department of Rehabilitation that has a chance to go through LTOP, go through it, because it's life-changing, and it's the work that you put into it. Another group was GRIP. GRIP was so detrimental. I'm still actively participating with GRIP. Even out here, I'm working on getting back into the prison system, just like through Legacy, if that's able to be done. But I'm double-timing, because GRIP was instrumental. Digging down, Bernard was so awesome in my change. Brandy.
Oh,
these are people.
Bernard Moss. Has been huge in everybody, even mine. Yeah, no, absolutely. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And just digging in and going through the group, don't get me wrong, going through the groups, if I wouldn't have put in the work and done the participation and dug in and found out where everything started turning and where, I wouldn't have known about my whole childhood and everything and been able to speak about it. But going through those programs allowed me to do that. When I got out and bona fide, they give me the backpack and they give me the cell phone and stuff to help me along. That every little bit helps. Bernard, he came out with through the GRIP organization, Insight, Inside Out. They helped me get to a point to where I could meet up with someone and get taken the rest of the way to LA. I didn't have to be stuck on a bus not knowing where to get off, where to go afterwards. Because that's all that happens when an individual gets put on a bus is, okay, you're on the LA bus. Figure it out when you get there. No, Bernard and the GRIP organization said, no, we're going to pick you up and we're going to get you to where we can get you to where we know you're going to make it to where you need to get to. And that was a huge thing. I had a friend who came and picked me up and took me down there. And then when I got here, I've had people – as yourself, you sent me a laptop. I had the cell phone that I was responsible inside prison. I saved money, so I was able to go to Walmart because Bonafide didn't have a backpack ready for me right then and there when I got out. But they sent it to me through the mail. They made that they took it upon themselves to make sure I got it. But I had to get my cell phone first, And if I wouldn't have been responsible in there, I wouldn't have had a cell phone when I got out for the first few days that I was here. But yeah. GRIP helped with that. And I can't stress enough, when people are going in to do this work, as much as they put in is what they're going to get out.
Yeah. And, you know, so what JR is talking about, the GRIP program is guiding, ranging the power. And it teaches you about emotional regulation, root causes. And let me tell you something about GRIP. If it wasn't for GRIP, Legacy would not be what it is. I have admired and adopted a lot of stuff from GRIP in their format. And Bernard Moss has just been instrumental, and he's a former inmate himself. And he just he has been coming back to save us and to do what he can for us. And there's not enough thanks that I can give GRIP. I too am part of Illumini, and we love GRIP. I mean, just the stuff that they're doing, and just to put them out there. So the stuff that they do in GRIP, transforming the lives of the inmate population, they're actually starting a new program coming up to offer those resources for the families that have been suffering and victims. So they're actually creating a victim format that they send us through. And let me tell you something about GRIP. It is the most insightful program in the state of California. I don't care what anyone says. They have taught me so much, not just as a facilitator, but as a participant, most importantly, to get to where I'm at today. And once again, Legacy programs would not be anywhere near what it is if it wasn't for GRIP. Setting that bar, being that example and that inspiration for everybody. And it's the formerly incarcerated is where it's at. That's where the rehabilitation is. You know, we know what needs must be met. And I can't say enough about them, and I just want to really throw out, you know, guiding, ranging the power in the program. And if you have a loved one incarcerated, reach out to this program and see what they can do. To the essays are amazing, huh? Remember the essays?
Yeah.
A lot of writing in there. So.
But we also have to remember Bernard Moss he went through this program too. He helped build it. But Jacques Bourdon, he's the creator of the GRIP program, and he deserves all the credence in the world, because without him, that program would have never been brought up. I mean, something like it might have, but it's awe-inspiring, the work that he's actually done in the group, and then spread it to the prisons that they are touching right now, and hopefully so many more.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm telling you, there's people in recovery and rehabilitation that are before their time, and Jacques is definitely one of them. I mean, what he created was a good-ass monster, in my opinion. Like, it spread. You know, every prison's trying to get that program in, and as they should. So, but, JR, I just want to say that I'm very proud of you, brother, and everything you're doing, and you know, you're just you're going to do amazing in whatever you do, but I really do suggest that you get into advocacy and pursue that eventually, you know, as the time goes on and get hooked up with an organization that's going to send you places, because your story is inspiring. And I'm just so grateful to be part of this growth and watch you, because we have a hell of a history. You know, there's many years I don't think we liked each other, but, you know, it just doesn't matter though, you know, like we had our issues. It was just prison politics, but I'm just where we were and where we're at now, we're success stories, brother. And being part of watching you come out here and do what you do, and knowing I was in similar shoes, and how you're dealing with that, I'm just, man, I just am so grateful to be able to watch it. And it almost was like, you know, those midlife crisis where you go buy a convertible and get an 18-year-old girlfriend? you know those stories? It's like,
yeah.
That's what it's like. Or when you have your high school buddies around and you're 50 years old talking about, why we used to do this. Dude, I'm telling you, man, watching you go through this reentry and be part of it is just so rewarding. And it brings me back to where I was 2 years ago, because we forget, as much as I want to say that I'm still in touch, man, I've been working so long. I've been progressing. It's like you bring me back to my reentry days. And I just want to say that you should be commended on what you're doing, man, really, because they say within like 60 days, most of us go back. And it's usually because of lack of resources and the case of the efforts and stuff like that. But I just want to thank you for your story and for sharing with us. And brother, you can come on here anytime you want, you know. And in fact, if you have Sundays, let me know. I'll let you host. So
I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, well, because the thing is I want to, you know, Leona, I was a guest on this show 2 years ago, and Leona, I was on every week afterwards, and eventually I became a host. And that was part of my growth. That was part of what I do today and who I am. And I remember how it felt, and I want to be able to give back to, you know, all you guys coming home, and, you know, every opportunity to get that healing and that closure. And even though we'll never get the closure that is necessary, we'll get a piece of it. And I'm truly interested in how many people you're going to help with your story. So that's just something to think about. And like I said, brother, I'm just so damn proud of you and what you're doing. Just keep, you know, and we got about like 7 minutes, but do you have a Cash App or anything, or anywhere we can get donations or contact information to help you out?
Yeah, so my email is all lowercase, Johnny Roy, JohnnyRoy @gmail.com. And then if people are wanting to, send money to me or for whatever reason, My Cash App is Steelman9007, and anything
what
that is nine Steel STEELMAN 9007.
Oh, you sound like a Pittsburgh fan. What's
that?
You sound like a Pittsburgh fan.
Well, they won today.
let everybody know that this is, he's not asking for donations or for handouts. This is purely my motive of just putting him out there. And you know, I want to bring our community I want you to be part of his growth just as much as I am, and his family and his friends. And huge shout out to Raina and a bunch of other people that have been helping him, and especially Grip. But this is not him just out here asking for house. This is my choice and decision of trying to get the community involved. So go ahead, brother. I'm sorry.
No, I appreciate that. And anything that is sent to me is going to be solely for job purposes. It'll be to better myself. It's not going to be for the, never going back to prison. I'm never going back to prison. If I have to have 6 jobs in one day, that's what I'll do. If I have to follow behind a dog and have him poop into a bag and then call him Mr. Jingles afterwards, that's what I'm going to do.
That's right, brother. And I'm going to make sure, you know, you got a good support network, so you should be all right.
Oh, yeah. And it's all about paying it forward for the next person that's coming out, because we have some good brothers that have went in, fought, and gotten their life opportunity given back to them. They're just waiting on governor signatures, and they're gonna need that same helping hand that I had from individuals like yourself, from Reyna, from the Grip organization, Bernard Moss, from, like I said, from you. You were instrumental. I'm sitting here looking at my laptop right now, and I got the job that I got because of that, me being on that computer searching. And I'm going to get more. I'm going to have a better job. I mean, who knows? This might be the job that takes me all the way, but it might not. I might end up with a better job. I might end up going back into the prison and giving all my time there and getting paid for it or whatever. I'm about doing better and helping the next person. It's no longer about being understood. It's about understanding now.
No, absolutely. You're the new blood, brother. You're the new blood of Legacy Program, as far as I'm concerned. Programs need you, man. Like, no, really. Like, we need that rawness that, you know, when I was out, I was angry. I was pissed off, you know, and I just turned it around into something good. And you're going through that phase, man. And I want that rawness that, you know, any organizations out there that want to reach out to Johnny, please do. You are missing out if you do not get him. This man has facilitated many, many groups, CBT, DBT-based groups. This man is trained in mentoring and so much stuff. Please reach out to him. Please put him to work. Give him a, you know, fulfill, you know, invest in his purpose and in his mission and his destiny. He is meant to share his story to help others, especially the youth.
And Breeze, real quick, my phone number for anybody that wants to call me, and the best time to call me is at 7:30 at night. That's the best time. So Pacific time. So my number is 213-453-5809. Once again, my email is johnnyroy2022@gmail.com. And
nice.
Just reach out, and I'm open. I'm an open book, and I'm willing to sit there and talk to anybody and help in any way that I can, or just listen if someone just needs to talk.
And that's true. You text me all the time asking me how I'm doing, how I'm really doing, and I appreciate that. I need that. You're just as instrumental in my staying out here as I am in yours, brother. Really, like I do appreciate the reaching out. So. Yeah, people, put him to work. Please get him a job in the organization. You guys, I'm telling you, you're missing out. This man is insightful, and he's driven, and he will not fail at any cost, I promise. And, JR, I just want to say thank you so much, brother, for sharing your story. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show, and I really do hope somebody finds this as an opportunity to invest. And not in just you, but their own organization, and to snatch you up. And because you're very valuable in this community, and I just can't say enough good stuff about you, brother.
And I appreciate you, Breeze, for bringing me onto your program and allowing me to share my story and put myself out there. And I didn't think that we'd make a whole hour without having that awkward moment, but hey, we actually made it, and it was easy too.
No, I appreciate that. And you know, the thing is that my resources and my platform is now yours. So you just let me know what you want to do, and you take it off from there, okay?
I appreciate that, brother.
That's how it works, boss. I love you, brother. You tell me what you want me to do, and I got you. You just take over those reins, all right? I appreciate it. Take care, brother. Thank you so much. Anybody, everybody, reach out to this brother. He is going to make the world change through his words, his story, and his actions. And Jared, thanks, brother. I love you, man.
Love you, too. Thank you, brother.
Yes, sir. All right, bye.
Bye.
And that will conclude our show. Everybody, you have a wonderful, blessed Sunday. Enjoy the family. Enjoy the fresh air. Enjoy a tree. Enjoy the freedoms of life. You know, be that change, be that inspiration for somebody. At Blog Talk Radio, shedding light, we love you at Legacy Programs Education Reentry. We are here for you. And just keep doing what you're doing. Be productive and be progressive. Love y'all. Stay blessed. Bye.
Go Steelers.
Ha, you dick.